say, courtesy of your attention for a little while. I want to talk to you from the book of Proverbs. My understanding of the way the book of Proverbs came into being is that, of course, it was under Solomon's dispensation that he sent scholars throughout the known world, gathering up the wisest sayings that he could find. They're not all original to him. Some of the things that are in the book of Proverbs have been found in Egyptian writings centuries before Solomon's time. He gathered together the best wisdom of the world that he could find. And then he put it in the context of the Jewish belief system, and he filtered it through his understanding of God personally. I would say it this way. The Bible would be an incomplete book without this shrewd, sometimes homely collection of little one sentence, sometimes two or three sentence pictures of the way people ought to live their lives. Just everyday things. The blueness of the womb cleanseth it, he said. Things like that. If the axe is dull, you have to put forth more effort to cut the wood. The Bible is designed to cover all parts of life. And so he put things like that in it, as well as the story of the crucifixion and so forth. We'll talk about Solomon's wisdom a little bit today. The book begins by talking about, of course, as you would expect, the value of wisdom as opposed to living life without it. And I mentioned that it's filtered through Solomon's eyes. Well, he was a Jew, and his whole background for centuries had come from the law of Moses, the Ten Commandments, something that was absolutely unique in the world. Even today, the Jewish religion is different from any other. And I don't know how atheists can explain the Jews, because they got something that's absolutely unique. How can you justify, how can you explain this bunch of runaway slaves go out in the desert and develop an absolute moral system that is the wonder of the world, that still is the rule of life today? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Things of that sort. And all the things that came from it. Well, that had been taught for generations. And it had been proven because God backed it up. He did things that also no other group could ever claim it happened in the very same way. Solomon is looking at all these proverbs that he collected in his book from that background. And he particularly wanted to impress it on his people as a good ruler should do, because he wanted them to be as happy as they could be. And to his best understanding, and still to mine today, the happiest that anybody can possibly be in life is to follow the Lord as closely as you can, because everything else got a whole lot more trouble in it than following the Lord has. So that's what he taught people to do. And also, if you think about it, wisdom, which in Solomon's time meant beginning understanding of what God is, and therefore the rules of right and wrong, and proper behavior humans ought to carry out, which has things in it like value in human life, right to personal property, ownership of personal property. No country, no people are ever really free if they don't have right to personal property. No society is safe that doesn't value human life. The cultures around Solomon at the time that the book of Proverbs was written, their gods were reflections of what they themselves were. Lustful people create a lustful god. Murderous people create murderous gods. A jealous people, they create jealous gods. And so the Romans and the Greeks and name them, Norwegians, they had their whole pantheon of gods, a great number of them. That's the kind of gods they were. When you read the history of them, they killed each other and they did mean things to each other and quarreled and did all kinds of lustful and cruel things and so forth. It's a cycle. It's the only way it could be, because it's a projection of themselves. The Hebrew religion alone believed in one God, and that God was absolutely the same all the time. His ways are just, his ways are merciful, and they're true. There's nothing else in the world like it. So that's what Solomon is talking about, and that's what he is calling wisdom. Being able to understand that there is such a thing as right and wrong, that there is a consequence for doing the wrong, and that there is a blessing in doing the right, and that we have a definition of what those things are, beginning with the Ten Commandments, but developed into much more that went from it. So that's what he's talking about. And those basic principles, folks, they're the foundation of society, of human happiness, of people being able to live with one another. This is US 62 out in front of us here. It's got white stripes down the center of it. It's got a white line on each side of it. If you drive toward Meeker a little ways, you'll see a sign that says it's a curve. Take those all down if you want to. Let people drive any way they want to go on it, any speed limit, any direction. How safe would you feel going out there? Well, that's what happens to any society that pulls down its moral codes. It doesn't get, it's unsafe to live among them. That's why Solomon placed so much emphasis on the rule of right and wrong and so forth. And so here he says, I want to read to you Proverbs 1 and 10. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. This first word, second word, I mean, my son, that's the way you like to hear a leader talk to his people. I don't think Solomon just meant his own literal children. It wasn't preserved just to them. It came down to you and me. He was talking about his nation, and he is essentially saying to them, God put me in the position to be king. And I've tried to do a good job of it, and I've studied what the Lord wants me to do, and I'm offering this to you now, folks. He was saying, in the tenderest way that I know how to, I consider you my children. I consider that your welfare is important to me. My dad cared what happened to me in my life, and I hope yours did too. And because he did, the Bible talks about parents laying up in store for their children. He made provision for me while I was growing up. He made sure I had shoes and food and a pillow to sleep on and so forth. And that's what Solomon said. But the most important pillow that he had to give you, it can't be done by my laws or regulations. It's got to come from inside you. So he exhorted him, my son, if sinners entice thee, I'm the king, but I won't be there every time a sinner entices you. It's going to be up to you. We make decisions in life. And we live with the choices that we make. The most that parents can do is teach their children what the rules ought to be. If I can say that another way, you can give your children knowledge, and we better. But you can't give anybody wisdom. Wisdom is applied knowledge. You can tell them how, but you can't make them use it. And so the most we can do is to try to tell them and hope they will. But did you ever read what the scripture said to a man that pleases God? God gives him the opposite, wisdom and knowledge. God gives wisdom and then the knowledge to go how to use that wisdom. He does it just the opposite of what we're able to do because he's greater than we are. Well, Solomon is trying to get that across to these folks. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us work privily for the innocent without cause. Swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down to the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast thy lot among us. Let's all have one purse. My son, walk thou not in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. So that's an exhortation not to be caught up in loving the pleasures and associations of this world so much that you're willing to do wrong to get them. That's kind of a summary of what he said, isn't he? sinners enticing. I want to talk about that word sinners a little bit. This is a little bit aside from my message this morning, but it's a really important point, and I hope you will remember it and consider it. There are two Hebrew words that are translated sinner or sin. And one of them is a generic word. It means everybody. It's what the New Testament meant when it said, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. That's a description of what happened to Adam and Eve at the garden. But there is another word, and that's the word that is used here. And it means willful, malicious, disobedient, knowledgeable, choosing to move away from God. God won't deal with you so heavily about the sin that you may have felt that you got from Adam and Eve. But he'll deal with you about choices that you make. If we point our footsteps the wrong direction, well, for most of us, the Lord loves us, and he'll give you some time anyway to prove the course you want to go. There are lots of sinners who live wicked lives and live to be old. But there is always an end that comes with that. So he said here, my son, somebody that I love dearly, doing the very best that I can do to make your life as happy as it can be. If sinners entice thee, don't you make a choice to go with that. That's your consent. You have a choice to decide whether or not that's the way you want to live. He said not to do that. He said, walk not thou in the way of them. Refrain thy foot from thy path. In the verses above this, if I'm not mistaken, he talked about, I think I quoted that here. Hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Instruction of thy father. Well, who was your father? Some of us had good fathers. I hope most of us did. And some of us didn't. But this goes beyond just the literal dad that you had there. What he said was, you Israelites, you're surrounded by pagan nations. And they don't have the same moral code that you do. They don't have the idea of not killing people. They have murder. They have stealing. They legalize things that are wicked and immoral and wrong. Listen to the instruction of your father. And that father goes all the way back through the generations of Moses. I don't want to be negative about our world today. Lord, help me not to be. But I do grieve. Don't you a little bit at what's going on in our nation? Because they're forsaken the laws of our fathers. The things that are happening in our country, the leaders, the people who should know better, are moving away from things. It almost seems like today that the fact that our fathers believe something is enough for people to reject it and decide to go in. But Solomon said, don't do that. Don't do that. And he categorized that in the context of making willful sin, decisions that are not very wise, that I wish you wouldn't go that way. This wisdom that Solomon is talking about here, we're all going to learn it one way or another. You can learn the wisdom of not walking in the way of sinners, consenting to what they do. You can learn that wisdom by listening to the Bible, to parents, to people who've been there. You can learn by that. Been a carpenter in my adult life. You don't have to learn to hammer harder than your thumb by hammering your thumb. I did. Most of us do, but you don't have to learn it that way. You can learn it by watching what somebody else does. But if you don't choose to learn that, then you're going to learn it by bitter experience somewhere along the way. My son, if sinners incite thee, consent thou not. Listen to the instruction of your father. And this word instruction, it means more than just telling you. It means applying discipline with force. It means when you're a little boy and you steal something, which most little boys do at one time or another, you break somebody's window, you get in a fight with somebody, and your dad put some discipline on you. You best not resent that. God will discipline you too, for that matter. God's discipline a lot of times is different than human discipline is. Humans, I'll describe it this way. God makes things so that if you do foolish things with them, they hurt you. And it's not that that hammer has any animosity to you. It'll hit the nail just as hard as it'll hit your finger. The hammer's not mad at you, but you learn a lesson from it. The Lord's discipline is like that. It teaches you without being angry at you necessarily or trying to hurt you, but it teaches you that there are some things you just better let alone. Two objects cannot occupy the same space at the same time. Get out here in the highway like I was talking about, and that 18-wheeler comes around the corner, and he's bigger than you are, and something's got to give, it's probably going to be you. And you can learn that by experience if you want to. You might not survive it. Or you can learn it by having the highway department tell you those white lines on the side of the road, that marks your travel lane. Don't get outside of that. Life would be a whole lot better for a lot of people if they'd stay in their lane, you know. So, my son, he said, heed the instruction of your father. Listen to the voice of your mother. There's a difference in a father's instruction and a mother's instruction. Father's got firmness in it. God intended it to be that way. Man's voice sounds differently. I could say it this way. I had a dear friend. He and I were in the basement of his house having a discussion one evening. He would listen to me with one ear and his children with the other. His children were upstairs. And he heard his wife chiding them, correcting them. Finally, he said, I'm going upstairs. Okay, what are you going to do? He said, my voice sounds different when I tell them to quit than mother's does. Well, that's true. God made it that way. He intended fathers to instruct their children and all folks in children not to resent the chastening of the Lord. It's a chastening of a father. To compare this in a spiritual sense, the chastening of a mother is like the chastening of the church with the bride of Christ, and is gentler and it has a different voice. And in reality, the Lord wants his church to comfort people that he has disciplined. Even people that God has actually brought judgment against, he wants us to be able to comfort them if possible. As long as they're in this world, there's hope for the soul. Do everything we can to deal with that. He said, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, and I will repay. So a mother's way. Trying to get her boy not be led aside by sinners. I got a song I like about that. I'm not a very good singer, so brace yourselves. It's a real sentimental song to me. It means a lot for various reasons. It's Hold Fast to the Right. I think Kitty Wells made it famous. Kneel down by the side of your mother, my boy. You've only a moment, I know. And stay while I give you this parting advice. It is all that I have to bestow. Hold fast to the right, hold fast to the right, wherever your footsteps may roam. Oh, forsake not the way of salvation, my boy, that you've learned from your mother at home. In your satchel you find there's a Bible, my boy. 'Tis the book of all others the best. It will teach you to live and prepare you to die, and will lead to the gates of the blessed. I gave you to God in your cradle, my boy, and I've taught you the best that I know. And as long as his mercies permit me to live, I shall never stop praying for you. Hold fast to the right, hold fast to the right, wherever your footsteps ringing. Oh, forsake not the way of salvation, my boy. Thanks for the mother at home. That's what mothers try to do, godly mothers. Was your mother like that? I hope so. I hope so. If she wasn't, what about your grandmother? Was there somebody in your line somewhere? Even if the answer is no, God's church is a mother. And this is the passion that he wants us to bring to every worship service, to every needy soul. Kneel down here with us a little while and let's talk to Jesus. I know that life is calling you. I know you're going out and make your own decisions. That's what the church is saying to you. Just got a little while here, a few worship services, a few hours to sing and pray together, and you're going on your way, and you're going to face the world, and we can't control what you do, but we can appeal. We can reach out to you. We can love you. Kneel down here beside us. I want to give you this parting advice. Can't make you rich. Not going to give you a good job ourselves. This is what we have to bestow. Hold to the right. Hold to the right. There are two voices in the world, folks. And we always must go one way or the other. Many times the enticement of sinners is a more compelling voice than the gentle voice of a mother. When a young man, a young woman gets among friends and they're caught up in their excitement and revelry and their pleasures that they have and their visions of the future, it's so easy to be influenced by that, to make mother and dad look so foolish, so stay at home. Same old farmyard, same old cows, same old chickens. That's the way it was when I grew up. I didn't like them anyway. They're always underfoot. And you try to walk through the chicken yard and they squawk and fly up in your face and feathers go everywhere. But out here, there's a town. There's guys sitting in there drinking things and having a good time and they laugh a lot. It's got an allure. It's got a pull in other ways too. Our world is full of learning and knowledge, and it's full of theories or philosophies about the way people ought to live that are contrary to the scriptures. So often, it's one of the devil's favorite tricks to put together three or four facts and make them look like an obvious truth that looks like everybody should understand. Look at this little evidence here, and it means that there's no God. And there's no God. Look at the way this world is created. How could you possibly look at the tides and the sun and so forth and say there's a God? Oh, follows a natural course. Did you know that people can be like ships laden, heavy with all kinds of merchandise, knowledge, information, very skillful, very learned, leave righteousness out of it? And it's like they're sailing out of port into the ocean with no destination and nowhere to go. Just aimless. It doesn't really mean anything. Learning all about how many, whether or not they're aliens on other planets, maybe that's a strong example. What does that have to do with whether or not you're going to have enough food to eat tomorrow? Our nation has spent billions of dollars trying to find out things that are really useless to us if you knew the truth. Don't leave God out of your lives, folks. I'm not saying don't study that. I'm not saying don't learn how to do things or get knowledge and understanding. Don't leave righteousness out of it. Because that's what gives it focus and purpose and direction. If it doesn't make any difference who kills who and we're all just animals anyway, what's the point in having laws or trying to show kindness or having families? Just do whatever you want to do. Oh, but there is a purpose. There is a reason. It's valuable to serve the Lord. Hear the words of your mother. Look what it said. I gave you to God in my in your cradle, my boy. I hope your mother did that. My mother did that. And maybe she didn't. When you were in the womb, God, the scripture teaches us that the members of our body were woven together like the veil in the temple that divided between the holy place and the most holy place, made of silver and gold threads. God created you specifically and directly, and he did it for you. There's a purpose for you in his world. So many people with so much knowledge and understanding really have no valuable purpose with what they're doing. The Lord wants you to have a purpose in your life. He designed you to fit a place in his world and to live a useful life here. My son, if sinners entice thee, everybody's going to hear those voices. Consent thou not. Please don't go that way. I want to skip some of the things that are in this. And maybe not skip them too much either. Look what he said. Come with us, let us wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Here is the enticement. The devil presents things as different from what they really are. It doesn't show it. This passage sounds like, we'll all be one mind. Come and join in with us, and we'll join our purses together, and we'll all be in this together. And how can we possibly all be wrong when we love each other so much and there's so many of us? The united voices of the millions cannot lend the slightest basis to falsehood. But the cry of wrong is, that's the way to go. And look how deceptive it is. It makes murder and robbery sound like adventure and exciting. We'll lay wait for people and we'll swallow them up whole. We will be so much better than they are. This is a reference to what happened to Korah, Dathan, and Abiram when the ground opened up and swallowed them. And they said, we'll be just like that. We will be so triumphant in what we're trying to do that nothing can stand in front of us. We'll get everything we want to do. Join in your lot with us. And they make murder look like it's child. What if it's not just child's play? What if you do these wicked things? For instance, murder. I hope nobody here ever gets caught in that kind of trap. But suppose, how can you be sure when you pull that trigger that you're not going to get caught? The jails are full of them. Yeah. Folks, it would shock you if you haven't been there how easy it is to get behind prison bars. I had a convict tell me this. He'd been dismissed to go to visit a funeral. One of his family members, the state in their mercy, allows that sometimes, and he went with two deputies. The penitentiary where he was being held was at the end of a long road back through the woods. And he said, I was halfway back there, and the deputies pulled off onto a side road, and they said, you're getting ready to escape. Jump out of this car and run. So they started pulling their guns. He said, I put my hands in my lap. I sat as still as I could. I said, if you're going to shoot me, you're going to shoot me right here in this seat. They would have done it. It'll shock you how easy it is to get in jail. I have talked to men in prison who were sitting in the bar room at a bar like they have, and a murder took place right beside them. And all of a sudden, the lights went out, and the gun came sliding down and stopped right in front of them. And then here come the police through the door. They didn't know the people who got killed. They didn't know the people who killed them. But there's the gun. I knew a man who spent 37 years in prison at the time I knew him. He's probably in eternity by now. When he was 17 years old, he went with some of his friends all over than him, his first car, and he drove by a convenience store, and he said, let us stop and go in. We're going to get something, beer and cigarettes. He couldn't get them because he's too young. Stop here, and we'll go in and get them. And they went in and killed a clerk and got the beer and cigarettes, three of them. And he was a driver and come and jumped in the car and said, take off, get out of here. He went, why would I do that? You better run. Well, he got caught. And all three of them pointed the finger at him and said he was a murderer. And when I knew him, he'd been in prison 37 years. It shocked you how easy it is to get in prison. But the devil didn't tell you that. He tells you with his enticement, you can get away with this. Everybody's doing this. It doesn't matter. It's such a little thing. It isn't a little thing. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Hear the words of your mother and your father at home, people who loved you and prayed for you and brought you to meeting and tried to keep you from getting into those kind of things. It'll save your life. It'll save your life. Lord, help us this morning. People want excitement and pleasure, and they want money, and they want recognition and acceptance. When an opportunity, when a decision is presented to any of us folks, the first question we ought to ask ourselves every time is it right or wrong? That's what I ought to determine. If it's right, I'll hold to the right. Then it's safe to do it. But if there's something about it, you just wouldn't want Dad to know what you're doing. Or somebody that you believe wouldn't do the wrong thing. If it's that way, that's all you need to know. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. The enticement of sinners is deceptive. It's not honest. It doesn't present things the way they really are. That's what the rest of this scripture says. Surely in vain is the net spread in the sight of any bird. There are at the last of this passage I've read you three terrible sentences that strip away the glamour and show the ugliness of the enticement of sin. It's like bait on a fish hook. And when you get past it, it wasn't really good. Most of the time it's plastic. But the barb's real. The cruel barb and the bleeding lip, they are the consequence of allowing the bait to entice you into eating something that isn't healthy and sound for you. And then he said, and I know there's more than one way to look at this, but I'll approve it. I will approach it this way today. Surely in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, which means if the bird knows what you're doing, it wouldn't go there. I could interpret that this way. You ever try to sneak up on a crow? I had a friend who flew airplanes. He flew small airplanes, and he flew long distances, and he got bored, and he said, I used to try to hit crows with my airplane. So I never hit one. They were right up there where I was, and I'm a lot faster, but there's something about them. They've got, you ever seen a crow hit on the highway? No, you haven't. Buzzard, but not a crow. The net is spread in vain. He got eyesight and ability to gauge the speed of a moving object and then get out of the way. A deer, that's different. You can hit a deer, but you can't hit a crow. Surely in vain is the net spread in the sight of any bird. If sinners entice thee, why would it spread the net? Because they're going to take away your power to fly. That's what the net is for. Folks, that's what the devil's net is for. He wants to clear your wings. The plan God had for you, the soaring, beautiful place in his world, he created you to fill. The devil wants to get you in a trap and ruin it all and destroy it. It's sad to come down to the end of your journey, bitter and disappointed, and look back and think, I'm so much less than God intended me to be. My life has not turned out well because I didn't pay attention to the snare. Well, the Lord wants us to be at least as smart as a bird. These three terrible sentences I mentioned to you, they strip away the frosting and show the mud pie that's underneath. Surely in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lay privily for their own lives. Gossip is disrespectful. Of course it is. That's why it's fun to talk about, maybe. Did you hear what happened to, did you hear what those people did? You should have been there. That was the ugliest thing. And get a story spread on somebody. You can't devalue somebody else without devaluing yourself first. You can't steal from somebody else without devaluing yourself first. In the end, every thief is stealing from himself. In the end, every gossip is taking away chunks of their own character and trading it for a little bit of pleasure. That's more fun than listening to me on Sunday morning. I know that. But this is the right way to go, folks. This is the right way to go. My son, if sinners entice thee, and his sisters too, daughters, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. They lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. hiding from themselves. How do you hide from yourself? You hide from your conscience. Conscience telling you, you shouldn't do this. But you tell your conscience some lies and make it so it sounds like you could, and they wait privily for their own lives. Every sinner is committing a form of spiritual suicide. Because when you come to the end of the journey, there's going to be a just God there. You're going to have to answer to him. So we have a duty to stand by those things and teach them. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. We can't leave it on that kind of a note. Jesus Christ, seeing people caught in both these kinds of sin, the one that's inherited and the one that's committed, he came and shed his blood and offered his life in great mercy, so that people who have done wrong to others, people who let the sinners entice them and have gone down the wrong way, can find a way back. I repeat, Brother Martin's comment from Monarch once again, those folks who brought that woman taken in adultery to the Lord. And he first dealt with them about their own souls, and then he dealt with her. And those wonderful words, neither do I condemn thee. You're free. I can hear him. And Brother Martin's brought it out. Jesus saying to those fellows, you think you put me in a trap? I wish you'd go find some more of these people and bring them down here. Let's forgive them too and get them started down the journey. If you've been caught by sinners, Jesus Christ died for you and he loves you. He is able to forgive you and wash your sins away and remove them as far as the east is from the west and cast them in the sea of forgetfulness and start you down a new road filled with wisdom, filled with mercy and peace. That is the great beauty of the Christian religion, the plan that the Lord made to deliver our souls. So I want to repeat myself one more time this morning. Sons, daughters, in our congregation, wherever we have the opportunity to spread the gospel, as sinners enticing, please don't go that way. Please don't do that. You're going to hurt somebody. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to hurt the people who love you. You're going to frustrate the plan God made for you. And my glad message is, you don't have to. Jesus Christ came to bring us salvation that can set us free and lift us above all the net, all the priving, all the lying to our consciences that can deliver us. Thank you so much for the courtesy of your attention this morning.